Let's hear from TM Consultants Director Tim Marshall, who's the Deputy Chair of the Organic Federation of Australia.
Thanks for having me.
Now, what role do you think organics will play in feeding the world's growing population?
Well, I think organic has a very major role to play in feeding the world's population. It already feeds, I believe, something like 50% of the world's population, because they are mainly peasant farmers who grow their own food on very small blocks of land, and there is very ample evidence that they can achieve better yields with organic.
But even in developing countries, there's some use of synthetic fertiliser where farmers can afford it.
That is correct, yes, but there's still a very large number of farmers who either don't need or can't afford to use organic, inorganic fertilisers.
Tim, I'll just bring one of the comments that we've received on the Facebook page, the South Australian Country Hour Facebook page. Cheryl has got in touch with us and she says, organics hasn't come of age yet, but the truly competent producers match and in some cases exceed conventional production figures. Moreover, organic producers recycle more, use fewer non-renewable resources and require less irrigation and build soil rather than degrading it. Cheryl writes a little bit more to us, but you can see her full comments on the Facebook page, and thanks to Cheryl for getting in touch with us. Tim, do you think the organic industry has come of age?
I actually think the organic industry in much of the developing world has always been of age and has never had a significant competitor.
What do you mean by competitor? What would compete?
What I mean is always produced greater yields over most of, say, peasant farming in Indonesia and Sri Lanka and other places where I have very extensive direct experience of those systems. Without having read this report, I would have two major questions that I would ask of it. The first one is that we already have a major meta-study that has actually told us that organic can feed the world, and so we have to look at the differences now between those two studies. And the second question that I would have is why it uses a single factorial reason, which is yield, to make a claim about sustainability. It seems to me that they confuse those two things.
They're going on to look at other factors apart from yield. Yield was the first component that they analysed. And I guess just on that question of producing more food, because we obviously do need it, is synthetic fertilisers, they do increase yields, and it's a quick turnaround with a synthetic fertiliser. So, I mean, what's the problem?
Well, they increase yield, but at a significant cost. So those costs come in many forms. I mean, firstly, there's the very significant energy difference, which becomes increasingly important in a carbon-constrained economy. And I think there are many questions over this issue of yield. I mean, I personally have been onto more than 800 small farms in Indonesia. Now, what we call that Indonesia polyculture mixed gardening system, it's very definitely acknowledged that no other farming system produces more protein and more carbohydrate per square metre. Now, what we really want to do with those systems is improve their yield with better cultural practices, not with more unsustainable inputs.
So you're referring to there, I take it, like small-scale production?
Which feeds at least 50% of the world, yes.
And, I mean, but is there a role for organics in larger-scale production like what we see here in Australia?
Oh, absolutely there is. You know, because without having read the study and just seeing all the reports of the study, I mean, the questions are, does it address peak oil? Does it address peak phosphorus? Does it address biodiversity concerns? Does it address issues like nutritional concerns for food, etc.? Those things, to me, at this moment, are unanswered. And they are very, very... some of the issues about yield, I would not question. You know, For instance, the previous meta-study, which was very positive about organic, very clearly said that in our broad acre grain farming systems, organic does not compete with conventional. But then there are the sustainability concerns about those farming systems when we have constraints on phosphorus. We have declining soil health and reducing organic matter in soils, et cetera. You don't have to listen to Tim Marshall. You can go to the CSIRO website to see that more than 50% of the soils in Australia are degraded, and by far the greatest percentage of them are associated with these unsustainable broadacre farming systems.
You're listening to The Country Hour. It's 19 past 12 and we're chatting with organic consultant Tim Marshall, who's the Deputy Chair of the Organic Federation of Australia, and we've been referring to Canadian research which has found that organic crops yield up to a third less than conventionally grown crops. That was one study that's come out of Canada that has been comparing crops in different countries across the world, and there's more details about that study on the Facebook page if you search for the South Australian Country Hour on Facebook. Tim, one of our listeners has commented that in first world countries there's a place for organics, but in a whole world approach to feeding the population, there's not. Tim, we've been chatting about organics in a developing country. Here in Australia, because of the increased costs, is organics really only an option for the rich upper class who can afford to pay more for food?
No, look, I think there are some really serious questions that we have to ask about the design of a study like this, and again, confusing the issue of yield and sustainability. Now, firstly, many people, like myself, believe that we can very easily feed the world, and regardless of the system we choose, whether it be organic or non-organic, the essential thing to do to feed ourselves is to change our diet. To eat less meat, to eat still grains, but a smaller component of grains, and to eat more vegetables. And if we do that, then we are very, very able to feed a growing population.
But how do you go about getting the world to eat less meat? it's a big challenge.
The first thing you do is give meat a true value rather than a subsidised value. And the second thing you do is...
How is it subsidised?
It's subsidised by the fact that we don't take into account the cost of those declining soils, the cost of the increasing cost of our health system, etc., which is a factor of the whole design of the diet, of the food system that we're in, and we put no costs really on food as a result of that. Our governments struggle very, very hard to insulate the cost of food from those real costs, what the economists call the external costs of agriculture.
And Tim, just finally, Rebecca's got in touch with us and she says, in small farming enterprises, organic farming is a viable approach, but as the world population grows, so too does the demand for food. We as broadacre farmers have to grow the maximum potential out of the same amount of land every year, and we have kept up with this by moving away from traditional fallows and rotations that organic farmers still use, and to using no-till operations and using new crop varieties. Is the organic industry, where does it sit in terms of new farming systems? Is it up with the new farming systems?
We're fantastic new farming systems. We're now developing, for instance, something that has been a goal for 30 or 40 years, which is no-till organic farming systems. And these things have, you know, a huge amount to contribute to, for instance, carbon sequestration and to reduction of energy. Look, I know many, many conventional farmers who are genuinely concerned with feeding the world, but unfortunately they have access to really poor information about what constrains food across the world. The evidence is that we produce more than enough calories to feed the world. We have problems with political systems, land tenure and distribution of food, not with production.